as the silent seconds dance in their eternity about me, and set aflame again the fire to inspire my nimble fingers to procure the pen and awaken it in a resurrection, transforming the ink to the blood of the writer. As once again he bleeds his acquired wisdom like a light into the world.
Good morning, Carborough and Chapel Hill. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else. We're actually back again. I'm here in the studio with my co-host, John Paul McClellan.
Welcome back, Claudio. Welcome back, buddy.
I'm still a bit out of it.
Glad to see you're up above the grass still.
Thank you, man. I've been out with a bronchial bug for a while, and whoosh.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel good. But anyway, it's good to be back on a beautiful Carborough, Chapel Hill rainy day. We're here in the studio. We're pretty much going to freewheel it today. I think we're going to go into some unmedia content with some more things that John Paul has dug up on computer, as well as just talk about some shows we've done in the past in general, some folks that we have coming on in the not-too-distant future. What was your show about last week, John Paul? I wasn't here, so
it was a more political improv.
I thought so.
I pulled the computer stuff up and played various examples of things that were in the... in the link, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing what you can pull up on that thing.
Yeah, and there was I put up a bunch of stuff about Stephen Jones, the physicist from Brigham Young University, who did the work on testing materials Trade Center after the collapse and found the explosives and the residue of explosives of the exact kind that are used for controlled demolition. Let the audience hear what he had to say about mm-hmm. that stuff, and it's pretty conclusive stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, he's now come to the conclusion, and he said it in plain words, that he's absolutely certain that the towers were brought down by controlled demolition.
A measure for political prowess.
Yeah. He sent some stuff off to another lab for testing to get confirmation.
Independently.
Right, independently.
Interesting.
And he's gotten some good results back from that.
While I was laid up, I contacted some of the folks we've had on in the past, to include Peggy Taphorn, the director of Temple Theater in Sanford.
She was fabulous.
She was,
if not the best, one of our best subjects for interview, I think.
She just had an amazing life story. And anyway, she's directing Godspell right now, so if anybody wants to tune into that, call the Temple Theater in Sanford, and I think it's coming up pretty soon. And after that, they're doing a show that I want to go see, and that is Ain't Misbehavin'.
Oh, that ought to be killer.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Now, that's based on somebody's life, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It goes in a bluesy direction.
Is it based on who's the entertainer?
My head's in a bit of a fog right now. I'm still stumbling through it.
Not Betty Hutton, but...
No.
Which is one other thing that
Which
Peggy
is what
did.
Peggy performed as Peggy Hutton.
Betty Hutton. Wait, I can't remember her name right now. I'm drawing a blank. That's weird because I know her.
We're drawing a blank on radio.
Yeah, well,
realize how big that blank is getting.
Just as long as the air doesn't go blank.
Right. We're having a blank moment.
Our minds might be blank, but we don't want the air to go blank.
Anyways, and I also emailed Jerry Davis, who is the founder and the director of Burning Coal Theater, and hope to have him on again on the 22nd.
Great. Oh yeah, he was really good.
He was talk about, you know, having a great biographical sketch of the whole origins of the Burning Coal Theater.
Yeah, he laid it out very well.
He was, and he's invited us to two shows since, and we haven't made it yet.
No, and so, he's got a new theater, so that's something
in
we really have to get.
I told him I wanted a tour, so when he calls me for that, I'll let you know.
Yeah, we definitely want to go do that.
It's close to the historical Oakwood in Raleigh.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then also at some point I may get up with the comedian Big A again. He was a lot of fun to have on.
Yeah, he was.
And of course we were supposed to have Vida Renfro on today, who was going to talk to us about the gay and lesbian.
And she got the bug.
She got the bug, not from me.
No, hopefully
she was
going to
enlighten us on the gay and lesbian film festival. She's had a few entries on the lesbian end of things, and I was kind of looking forward to going into those dimensions and exploring them a bit, but she just sent me a very convincing email that she was down for the count.
Well, that'll be really neat. That sounds like it's going to be great.
I thought it would be about a month or so before we have an opening, but
love
to have her on.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
And that's pretty much the scoop as far as what lies ahead for the immediate. I'm sure some things will happen in the meantime. D-Most, Dion the Rapper, Him and I have gotten together and decided we're going to do a little black and pepper poetry slam. He's going to bring his rap, and I'm going to bring some of my revolutionary poetry into the fore, and we're going to make a radio show out of that at some point. The date is yet to be determined.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds interesting.
And, of course, next week, we're both on the line here. We're doing a double show. First, we're starting...
Right, with Paul Hodge.
Yeah, Paul Nagy. Paul Nagy.
Nagy.
Yeah.
Naj.
Or Naj, however the name is pronounced, yeah.
Naj. I said Hodge.
He does a show here called Touchstones, yeah, right after ours. And what we're doing is we're interviewing him for his background on our show, The Speakeasy.
Right.
And then we're switching roles, and he's interviewing us on his show.
Well,
right
he
after.
Doesn't know what he's in for, does he?
No, he does. This thing is going to go in spiritual, religious, and...
He might be sorry that
comedic directions all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
But
get a little wacky.
I'm looking forward to doing that. It's kind of nice to have that kind of interaction with somebody on the station.
Yeah. Oh, that's fun. Yeah. Well, we've had
and of course we've got to get Rocco back on again. He was great fun to have.
Yeah.
On.
You know, I came in one day and Rocco was on the air, and I showed up, and then a little bit later Paul showed up, and so Rocco imposed on us to sit down and talk on the air for
that
a few minutes.
That sounds like him.
So we had fun doing that, and we promoted that we were going to do a show together.
Yeah, I remember you telling
me. So that was kind of fun.
Good.
Rocco does a great show.
Yeah.
His music shows are really good.
I love his musical taste anyway. I
mean, yeah.
And
yeah.
It was interesting when having him on, you know, having worked with Phil Harris and Alice Faye.
He's going to help me out with some instrumental ballroom stuff.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said you were going to approach him for some music.
Yeah, well, I asked him about it, and he said he would put together some stuff for me so I could choose
good.
Out of it.
Well, I might want a copy of that just for listening pleasure.
It'll be really good stuff.
Yeah,
I know that. Yeah.
So what have you put on the table today for Politico Speak?
Well,
I think we're going to dedicate
you know,
some
I have
of
a
this.
Number of subjects, a couple of which we haven't covered at all yet on this show.
Hmm.
I have a take on the current political contest for president. That'll
be interesting.
That I think emerges out of the understanding of what our government really is.
I know the powers that be want to hand this thing over to Hillary Clinton.
Well, you know, some do and some don't. In my opinion, the whole thing is a charade.
Well, I believe that about politics in general.
And they know it. The candidates who are involved in it know it. They understand very well that what happens is that the corporate media grabs a hold of the public's attention and guides them to this contest.
It's like any act. They're doing theater, basically.
It's like theater. There's a lot of improv in it. But what it really is about is presenting a dichotomy to the public that they buy into.
To see which way they can get the public to lean.
Well, the thing is that if you look at the positions on issues between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, there's very little difference between them.
It's more personality than anything.
It's almost always been personality that elections are about, even at the local level. Because, let's face it, the American people don't really think hard about this. Not that they can't think hard about it. They choose not to.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really concentrate on the issues. They don't really concentrate on the facts and then reach a conclusion about who is best based on their position on issues. They first find somebody they like, and then they try to make their opinion of them, you know, fit into a mold.
Fit the mold, yeah.
Right.
Aren't they cute?
And it doesn't make any sense at all. That's why our country is so screwed up, because that's the way governance works, to the extent that it does work. And I'm saying it doesn't work, basically.
Yeah, it doesn't work at all.
So you have, and then if you really look at it, the difference between Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and John McCain is actually not very great. There's not really that big a difference. They all three are going to stay in Iraq for decades.
Barack seems like the lesser of the evils there, but he hasn't really made his position clear.
Yes, he has. He has.
How so?
His position is basically that there's going to be a force of U.S. troops either in Iraq. Well, there'll be some in Iraq for certain because they'll be in the embassy. The embassy that they've created is the size of the Vatican. Okay? Mm. It's a monstrous place. It's going to take thousands of troops to stay there and live in that embassy compound. So you're going to have, and then he's also talking about leaving a force there for fast reaction. Okay? So you're talking about 50 or 60,000 troops that are going to remain in Iraq for 100 years, just like they are in Korea.
So an occupation remains.
It's continued occupation. In spite of him talking about he's going to end the war, that's all baloney.
Well, that's what Hillary's shouting,
that's
too. I'll
crap.
End it the day I get in office.
It's
it'll
it's
take.
Just total lies. They're not going to end the war. They're not going to get all of our troops out of Iraq. They're not going to pull out all the U.S. contractor, mercenary, murdering sons of a guns.
Yes, indeed.
And they're gonna be there forever. And the Congress is not going to do anything about it. It's already shown that
we don't have a Congress.
We don't have a Congress. We have a bunch of corporate apologists who basically have spurned the electorate, who clearly elected this Congress in 2006 to get out of Iraq. And they haven't done it. So, you know, we live in a fascist government. We are under fascist control. Fascist means controlled by business.
Mm-hmm.
When the business and corporate side of society takes over the government, that's fascism. And that's what we have now. We don't have habeas corpus anymore.
Right, very clear.
We have we have spying without any warrants.
Right.
So that's just, they've spied on every single person in the United States who has a telephone or a computer on the internet.
It's certainly not limited.
It's ubiquitous. They record every single thing that goes out over the telephone. Every single conversation is recorded. Everything you put out on your computer in the entire United States network is recorded onto some sort of media that the government then uses in some way or another.
Well, we might be in a heap of trouble, but
and we have no way of knowing how they're using it, because they refuse to tell us. Okay, so we are living in a fascist government right now.
No, longer than now.
Well, it's been going on for a very long time. We just didn't know it. I think it's at least since 1845, when they made up an excuse to attack Mexico so that they could take over Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, California, Oregon, Nevada. Where else? Maybe one other state, I can't remember.
They haven't quite made it with North Carolina yet, which is interesting because it's so Republican-based.
Well, what do you mean they haven't made it with North Carolina?
Things that you were pointing out, politically speaking, North Carolina still seems to have a bit of its own independence.
Well, I don't actually think it does. I think it's just it's at a different level. But look at who we have for governor, Mike Easley. He's basically a Republican in Democratic suit. he was the one who pushed through the tax cuts for the ultra wealthy in this state. He did the same thing Bush did.
Oh, yeah.
He put tax cuts for the wealthy. He did nothing for people of low income or poor people. You know, if you really want to build wealth in a nation, what you do is you make all the advantages work for the people at the bottom of the income scale, so that if you have an income, say as an individual, of $25,000 a year, don't tax those people, don't take any money from them for Social Security, for income tax, for Medicare, Medicaid, any of those things. Just exempt those people. That's how you're going to build wealth from the bottom up. Because those people spend every dime they make. So that builds wealth in the businesses that they patronize.
It at least keeps the currency fluid. Yeah.
And for couples, make it $50,000. And for a family of four, make it $75,000. Then you're talking about building real wealth at the bottom end of the scale. And that's one thing that you'll never hear any politician advocate.
They don't seem to want to touch that. As a little commercial break here, I want to add something about I promised to do for DeMost. He is actually auditioning some people for a production he's putting on under DeMost Productions. That's DMOST. And he's taking auditions for a play called From the Ashes, Voices of Watts. It's a contemporary play featuring poems and short stories written by various authors that emerged after the 1965 Watts riots. More than 40 years later, these ideals still resonate. Come and be a part of the revolution. Help us open minds and provoke thoughts. Actors, singers, rappers, poets needed to bring these forgotten works back to life. All are welcome, and he's taking auditions, and people can still contact him. I think the audition dates have been changed. This was for March 30th. But I know there are some that there's more updated information you can get. Please feel free to contact him at any time. You can reach him by email or by phone. You can also ask Junior Zach Corsi any questions that you may have about this production or anything at all for that matter. The email would be dmost67@hotmail.com and the telephone number 919-489-2827. Again, that is for the upcoming production of From the Ashes, Voices of Watts.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good project.
I told him I'd promote it, and we did last time I was on, but that was moons ago.
Yes, yes.
5 weeks ago. Good God.
Moons ago. Welcome back again. By the way, happy birthday.
Thanks.
You missed your birthday. We had a fun time planned for your birthday.
Matter of fact, my birthday was when it hit me.
It was the day it hit you. I know. I got the call.
I know. I can't make it.
You were going to be the special guest.
That's right.
Your own radio show.
John Paul was going to take over as host. At some point, we'll still do that.
Maybe we can do that again
Absolutely.
Sometime. That'll be fun.
So bouncing around, we're going to make a lot of the content today, folks, because I'm still a little bit winded on media content. So I'm going to let John Paul take a bit of the lead here, and we'll just sort of bounce back and forth.
Yeah, and I have something.
I'm still catching my wind.
Yeah, good. Well, you breathe easy. Just relax. Sit back.
I'll breathe easy so he can get us into trouble.
Float downstream, as it said.
Right. Now, you had something interesting that you played for me this morning that you got off computer.
Well, I'm going to get to that in a little bit, but I've got something else I thought I might interject. Last week, I did a commentary for WCHL radio, which is the commercial station here.
Okay.
The big voice radio station.
Out of Chapel Hill?
Yeah, in Chapel Hill. Ron Stutz has this segment he calls The Commentators, mm-hmm. where he invites people in the community to come in and speak on any subject. Mm. It just has to have some kind of local tie-in. And that's the second commentary I've done.
And what was the particular flavor of this commentary?
Well, I have it right here before me, and I'd like to go ahead and read it.
We're going to do it on the speakeasy.
Yeah, it takes about 90 seconds. And this is the format that they use on WCHL for this segment.
I see.
It's called The Commentators.
And this is something you composed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, this is just something I wanted to talk about. So here it goes. And when you do this commentators thing, you have to give your name before and after.
Okay.
So I'll just read it the way.
Lay it on us, brother.
This is John Paul McClellan. I want Chapel Hill town government to take inspiration from Rattleboro and Marlboro, Vermont voters who recently passed resolutions to instruct their town's law enforcement officers to arrest George Bush and Dick Cheney, should they ever set foot in those towns, for their crimes against the Constitution, the statutes of the United States, the laws of war, and international law. I think our town government should pass a similar resolution instructing the Chapel Hill police to issue warrants for the arrest of Bush and Cheney for crimes against humanity, war crimes, and treason. These depraved criminals, Bush and Cheney, must be arrested, charged, prosecuted, convicted, and sentenced to life in prison without parole. I want everyone who hears my voice to call their representative in Congress and demand that hearings on the crimes of these two criminals, Bush and Cheney, begin at once, and that the results be referred to the U.S. Department of Justice for criminal prosecution and to The Hague for prosecution for war crimes against humanity. These criminals, Bush and Cheney, have butchered our Constitution, gutted habeas corpus, tortured innocent people all over the world, murdered millions of innocent people in Iraq and Afghanistan, illegally spied on every U.S. citizen, lied to the United States Congress, and repeatedly lied to the people of the United States. These depraved criminals, George Bush and Dick Cheney, must be held accountable if we are to save our Constitution and save our nation. This is John Paul McClellan.
Amen to that, brother. It's the first time criminals have been given so much free rein.
It is. And we got some really good response from that on the air.
Really?
Some nice call-in people. And one of the guys who does a segment called Wayne Pond's Word of the Day, who's a language professor, he made some kind of comment in support of what I had to say.
Good.
And he called in and did his little segment later. So it was pretty neat. And
bold statement.
Yeah, and I want everybody to know who's listening. You should call up WCHL Radio and participate in this commentary thing. It's 929 WCHL in Chapel Hill. And you call them up and tell them, yeah, I'd like to do a commentary. And they'll put you on the air.
And is the whole direction in this vein, or does it
it's
go
anything
pretty much
you want.
Anywhere?
It's okay. Whatever you want to talk about that has any kind of a local tie-in. And in fact, I've heard some that have almost no local tie-in.
And remember, we do have freedom of speech in this country, even though our politicians would like to keep that as limited as they possibly can. We do, in fact, have it. It is our legal right, so speak freely.
And there's nothing like WCOM to help facilitate.
That's for sure.
This is the most free speech-oriented radio station that I know of, although I do have to give kudos to WCHL for allowing people
but
to speak.
But we do spice
their mind.
It up here at the speakeasy.
Yeah, we probably go, we have more time to actually do it than they do on WCHL.
We're less commercially committed as well.
Yeah.
And on that note, speaking of the commercial element, I'm going to keep interjecting these here. Can I do a PSA?
Yeah. Good deal.
For WCOM, the Really, Really Free Market is a monthly community event for sharing goods, skills, services, and ideas where everything is absolutely free. All are invited to bring useful or beautiful things to give away, supplies to create something during the event, wisdom to share, or skills to teach. This event is self-organized by everyone who participates. Each participant is responsible for items brought that are not taken. The RRFM happens on the first Saturday of each month from 2:30 to 5:30 at the Carbro Town Commons and is free and open to the public. So do keep that in mind.
Sounds good.
And also want to make one more announcement on behalf of WCOM itself and very hopefully Claudio's speakeasy as well. WCOM now has opportunities for local businesses to underwrite a show on Carbro Chapel Hill's all-volunteer, listener-supported community radio station.
Yeah.
Because there is no commercial clutter, your message will always stand out. To find out more, you can email at underwriting@communityradio.coop or leave a message at 919-929-9601. And this is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else with Claudio and John Paul.
That's right. And you are listening to WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carbro.
And we have no idea what we're going to tell you next, but we'll get there when we get there.
Well, I do have this clip up on 9/11.
But they can't see that.
The demolition. I want everybody to watch your radio very carefully.
Yes, there's a clip
while I
coming
play
up.
This clip. Actually, the audio on it is pretty good. So
and give us a little give us the resource information on this as well as what we're getting into.
This is a clip from a movie called 9/11 Mysteries.
Okay.
It's been out for a couple of years now. It's kind of evolved as time has gone on, like Loose Change has.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think this movie is a little better than Loose Change.
That's saying a lot because I happen to believe in that Loose Change.
Loose Change is a very good film. So when I say this one's better, that's a big statement.
Yeah.
I think it's better in that there's more technical explanation, but it's presented in a way that's easy for anyone to understand. It's done totally in common language, and gives you the clips of various people who are talking about aspects of 9/11. This particular segment is about demolitions.
And you're taking this off computer where?
Yeah, I'm pulling this off of the Google Video. These people have posted.
And how
this.
Can that, how can our public find it?
Just Google 9/11 Mysteries.
Okay.
And if you Google 9/11 Mysteries, you'll find tons of links to it. And the movie is available for free online for anyone to watch.
Wonderful.
And
I
highly recommend watching it because it does give you information that has been systematically suppressed by the mainstream media.
Yeah.
That you will never hear this information.
Since the day of the event.
Yeah, that's right. And even before.
Yeah, even before.
Because,
well before.
The media, at least aspects of the media, apparently knew this was going to happen and were sitting ready to put out the propaganda about it.
Owned by the special interests, of course.
Yes. So this is a segment of 9/11 Mysteries Part 1. Let's see what we get here.
A 47-story skyscraper, building 7 folded neatly in 6.5 seconds. A textbook descent right into its footprint.
Okay, so for those who don't understand what this is about, what she's talking about is building number 7 in the World Trade Center complex.
The building nobody ever explained to us.
Right. At 5:20 on the day of 9/11, 5:20 in the evening, this building collapsed. If you watch videos, and you can Google that, by the way, you can Google WTC 7 collapse, and you'll get pictures of it collapsing, videos of it.
And the collapse was attributed to pretty much the same thing that brought down the Twin Towers, even though it was blocks away.
Yeah, they claimed that fire caused the collapse.
Yeah.
And you can see, you'll be able to see if you look into this, the various videos of the building are shown that were, these are videos made by the mainstream media that other people captured and now have out on the web that show that there were only a few small fires in the building. So there's absolutely no way the building could have collapsed due to fire. Besides which, no building in the history of construction, no steel framed building, skyscraper, has ever collapsed due to fire. And this includes buildings that burned for as long as 48 hours.
And never into its own footprint.
And still did not collapse.
And never into its own footprint without an organized implosion.
No, without demolition, it's never happened.
Right.
And in fact, this one building that burned for like 48 hours, the building was completely gutted. The only thing left
was
the frame.
Yes.
And it still did not collapse. So the idea that fire could make these buildings collapse is completely and utterly stupid.
Yeah.
And people who believe that need to pull their head out of the sand.
And what do we know about building number 7? What did it house? My understanding is it housed a lot of political and legal documents.
It housed the Securities and Exchange Commission documents on the Enron scandal.
Information it was of great interest to get rid of.
It housed a bunch of stuff from the FBI that was probably a lot of it related to what happened on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
It had CIA offices in it. It had the New York City mayor's emergency command center in it, which he was advised by his own people not to put there, but he put it there anyway. That's Rudy Giuliani,
yes, of course,
the idiot from New York. It just had tons of stuff. It had records of all different kinds that apparently are irreplaceable, that involve very high-level investigations.
Mm-hmm.
So
a very convenient thing
very
for them to get rid of.
Yes, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, okay, well, let's go on and listen to a little bit more of this.
Silverstein Properties now tells us that its owner was referring to the team of firefighters inside the building when he spoke of the decision to pulling the firemen out of harm's
way. Okay, pull. When you say pull a building, that means demolish it. That's what people in the demolition business say when they want to demolish a building. They say, we're going to pull the building. So Larry Silverstein is a liar, a blatant GD liar.
Well, how does this tie in? I mean, where did this pull decision come
from?
He
was being interviewed on a PBS interview, I believe it was, or maybe it was CNN. But anyway,
somewhere.
It was some mainstream media was interviewing him. And in the interview, he let that slip out. He was saying, well, you know, I had been, you're going to hear it on here.
Okay.
It's on, the interview is on here. So, well, let's just go ahead with it.
Let that speak for itself.
Arm's way. However, there were no firefighters in Building 7, according to FEMA, NIST, and Fire Chief Frank Fellini.
Okay, so just to recap, Silverstein said that what he meant when he said pull was pull the people out of the building, the first responders, firefighters, rescue workers, police.
And is this something he said on site?
This is something he said afterwards.
Oh, afterwards.
Okay, so then he says that you know, and he's saying when he was saying pull, he was referring to getting people out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what you just heard here was the report that FEMA, the fire department, and emergency people have testified that there were no people in those buildings. So what Larry Silverstein said is obviously a bold lie. He is a liar. And, by the way, he's a conspirator in the 9/11 attacks. Because he knew it was going to happen. He must have known. Else, how would he know that there were demolition charges in the building and the building was going to come down through controlled demolition? When he said pull the building, he meant demolish
time
it
to go
with controlled demolition. Mm-hmm. Okay, we continue.
They were ordered out at 11:30 that morning.
11:30.
6 hours later, the building came down.
You know, we heard this sound that sounded like a clap of thunder. Turned around, it looked like there was a shockwave ripping through the building, and the windows all busted out, and, you know, it was horrifying. About a second later, the bottom floor caved out, and the building followed after that.
Radio host Alex Jones notes the mark of a classic implosion.
This is a photo taken 1 second into Building 7's collapse.
This is good.
Notice the crimp. If we look at other controlled demolitions, we see that they first blow one of the central columns so the building falls in on itself. If you don't do this, the building falls outward. And
okay, so what Alex Jones is talking about there, and what we're seeing on the video image, is you see Building 7, and then you suddenly see a crease in the center of the building where it starts to tilt in at the center, and a crimp right down the building.
Like a concaving.
Right, from top to bottom. And you see the roof kind of start to come in at that one little point.
An inverted collapse, which is what you want.
Yeah, it sort of forms a V, and you see the stuff start to come down. So we'll continue.
Can damage surrounding structures. Building 7 had a classic crimp, or wedge. Its central column was blown out first, so it didn't structurally damage buildings just a few feet away from it.
Remember the mayor's emergency bunker? Ensconced on the 23rd floor of Building 7, it was retrofitted with super glass, water, oxygen, and its own generator. But Mayor Giuliani chose to find emergency shelter elsewhere on September 11th.
Yeah, and that building was actually quite a ways away from the towers.
Isn't
now, it
curious?
Is true that when the towers collapsed, a big chunk of the towers gouged out a section of the building on one side. So if the building were going to collapse due to that damage, which, by the way, it wouldn't have because damage wasn't great enough to make the building collapse, but even if that were the cause of the collapse, then the building wouldn't have come straight down. It would have fallen in the direction of where the damage was. It would have toppled over, not fallen down and broke into little tiny pieces like it did.
Would have responded to the weakest element.
Yes, and so that's another clue that Larry Silverstein and Giuliani are liars.
Why Building 7? Its structure was heavily reinforced. As the WTC Command Center, was it the hub for the 9/11 plan?
The CIA also had offices in that building. Did I
Interesting question, she said. Was it the hub for the 9/11 plan?
And what better way to cover up what you're doing than to destroy all the evidence by destroying that building?
Well, let's give the folks some more of this.
Also, in 6.5 seconds, lost forever were thousands of SEC case files on corporate fraud.
Security,
here we go.
Including those relating to the notorious activities of giants WorldCom and Enron. A few indictments for stock fraud, but what of the $70 billion California electricity swindle? It disappeared.
Yeah, Isn't that rather convenient?
Very handy. Yeah. Well, if we could just do that with our finances.
No one died in the collapse of Building 7. It was vacated well in advance of its implosion, but not the Twin Towers.
But all the information
was there. Why weren't police, firemen, and civilians in these buildings told what to expect? Tragically, employees in the towers were advised to return to their offices.
The announcement came on that everything was fine.
Yeah, that got me that morning when I woke up.
If there's a fire anyway, you vacate.
You get the heck out. Yeah. You don't go back to your offices. And that was the first thing that clued me in that something was really screwy was going on. That morning I woke up, I got out of bed, and just as I got out of bed, they started showing.
I saw the whole thing on television.
The tower that had already been hit, and I saw the smoke coming out.
I thought
it
was just a small plane that hit the window, because when I lived in New York City, there were pictures of that kind of stuff happening.
Yeah, well, I didn't know what it was. I knew it wasn't a small plane though, because I could see the damage was bigger.
It became obvious it was big.
And then I heard that that people in the building had been told not to evacuate.
Yeah,
saying,
that was the most
what?
Sickening aspect.
You can't be serious. Tell people not to evacuate when a plane has flown into the building and there's obviously going to be fires and stuff.
In any modern corporate facility, they do complete evacuations when there's the slightest smoke alarm going on.
Yeah, yeah. So it was just nuts. And as I watched, I realized, you know, this is just too weird. This cannot possibly be as they're saying.
It was surreal to watch.
It was. And then I was watching the two towers, one of them with smoke coming out of it, and I saw this commercial airliner, or what looked like a commercial airliner, fly behind the buildings on live television.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that plane shouldn't be that low.
No.
What's that plane doing
there? That's not even airspace.
Yeah. And I thought, well, that is just really weird. Is that plane going to fly into the building? And a few minutes later, it did.
Yeah.
It flew into the building. And I said, you know, this cannot be real. You know, there has to be something really fishy going on here. How can a plane get that close to this airspace without being intercepted?
Should have been shot out of the sky.
By air defense systems. Yeah it would have been at least... It would have been tailed and tried to force it down. They would have, under normal circumstances. But we found out later that the entire NORAD and NEAD system was told to stand down. They were told not to do anything. So that's one more piece of information.
This is who we have protecting us, America.
Yeah, and what they were doing was perpetrating this event. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm. I'm more inclined to believe that than anything.
Yeah, otherwise they would have launched interceptor aircraft.
There should have been no question about it.
Yeah, yeah. And there wasn't, because 67 times in the previous 10 months, they had launched aircraft to take care of much less serious
alarms. They'd had practice runs, yeah.
Yeah, and the FAA rules mandate. It's not a choice.
No, it's not.
You don't have a choice as an air traffic controller what to do. If you're airplane that you're controlling goes more than 2 miles or more than 15 degrees off course it's a very small amount
of time.
And if you can't raise them on the radio, and if their transponder goes off, that is considered an air emergency. An air emergency requires NORAD to launch interceptor aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know what's going on, NORAD is supposed to launch aircraft, get them up there, and visually inspect what's going on so they can report back to the people on the ground who are going to give the commands.
Absolutely.
As to what to do. It's not automatic to shoot the plane down like that, so we're not saying they're automatically supposed to shoot
them. It could be somebody losing control.
It could be any number of things, like the Payne Stewart event, where the golfer Payne Stewart was flying a private. He was flying in a private jet, and this happened only months before this. And that's how I know all this stuff, because I followed that incident, and there was a lot of information about the FAA rules that came out at that time.
And what happened there? Remind us.
What happened there was they couldn't reach the pilot of that aircraft. It was flying from, I think it was Florida or someplace east.
He'd lost oxygen or something,
and
wasn't it?
And going to, I don't remember where, but way west. And they couldn't get a response from the pilot. So within about 10 minutes, they had an airplane up in the air right next to that jet, and it was visually inspected, and the pilots in the interceptor aircraft said, well, the windows are completely fogged over, so there's no oxygen in there, there's no air pressure, they're all dead. You can't live.
I remember that.
You can't live at that altitude with no oxygen and no air pressure. So that's when they decided they would just trail the airplane. And they say that it just ran out of gas and crashed in Colorado out in the wilderness someplace. But I think actually they probably shot it down.
I would think
they'd have to. They wouldn't tell us that.
Yeah.
Because they lie.
They don't want to play up the truth.
They're liars. They're liars.
So anyway, take us back to this.
Okay, so back to 9/11 mysteries
exposure
on the demolition issue.
Indeed.
Tower 1, they were evacuating, but Tower 2 was fine, and we could go back to our offices.
We're about to go through the turnstile. The security guard says, where you guys are going? I said, well, I'm going home because I saw fireballs coming down. He said, no, your building is safe. It's secured. It is safer to stay in your building. Go back to your office.
Stanley Priamnath returned to the 81st floor. Then?
I just happened to raise my head looking straight towards the Statue of Liberty. And what I saw was a giant airplane coming straight towards me.
The South Tower was hit between the 78th and 84th floors. Trapped on the 81st floor by crushing debris, Stanley was rescued by Brian Clark. Slowly and painfully, they made their way down a stairwell to freedom. Outside, Stanley had a feeling of uncanny prescience for what was to come.
And we peered through the railing up through the trees at the tower, and Stanley said, you know, I think that tower could come down.
And I don't know why I'm telling this man this building is going. But I knew it was not over.
I said, there's no way. That's a steel structure. That's just draperies and carpets and furniture burning. You know, there's no way. And I didn't finish my sentence when the tower started to slide.
And there is no reason that
should happen. I still remember hearing, first of all, this boom, boom, boom explosion.
Listen to this. So you hear what he just said? He said he started hearing this boom, boom, boom explosion.
Like internal detonations.
Right.
Internal detonations.
Yeah, and that's an eyewitness right there.
Well,
there, by the way, there's
sources.
About 138 eyewitnesses who said they heard the explosions.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
Not all were blessed with intuition or foresight. Joseph Milanovich reached his son Greg by cell phone.
Greg at that time, I could tell by his voice, was scared. He said to me, Dad, can you get in touch with someone and tell them that there's about 20 of us on the northeast corner of the 93rd floor?
Greg had been about to leave the South Tower after the North Tower was attacked, but was told it was safer to return to his desk.
A couple of times he said, why did I listen? Why did I listen?
Yeah, that would
safer to return to your desk when there's a plane stuck above you?
Who right. Who was a director in the company that provided electronic security for the World Trade Center and Washington's Dulles Airport, both involved in September 11th? None other than the president's younger brother. From 1996 to 2000,
glad they finally brought that to light.
Installed what was referred to as a new security system at the World Trade Center. Wirt D. Walker III, a cousin of the Bush brothers, was CEO of Securecom from 1999 until 2002.
Another
interestingly,
Bush.
These facts have not been made public. Was it only a security system that was added during those years, or was it also the wiring for a long-awaited plan? Scott Forbes, an IT specialist in a firm that had leased space in the South Tower since its erection, reported an unprecedented power down in his building for almost the whole weekend prior to 9/11.
We were notified 3 weeks in advance of the power down by the Port Authority. That was relatively short notice to plan to shut down all of our banking systems.
Okay, let's repeat that.
That just caught me by surprise. What was that?
They were notified that they were going to shut down all the power in the building. I'm going to go back a little bit and try to bring that back. So we can.
They were notified 3 weeks in advance that the towers were coming down?
No, they were notified 3 weeks in advance that there was going to be a power shutdown in the buildings. Now, why would they have a power shutdown in the buildings? Here we go.
Reported an unprecedented power down in his building for almost the whole weekend prior to 9/11.
The weekend
we were notified 3 weeks in advance of the power down by the Port Authority. That was relatively short notice to plan to shut down all of our banking systems. It was a big deal. It was unprecedented. We had a data center on the 97th floor, so our originating servers were all there. During that weekend, the power down meant that there was no security. The doors were all open, basically. And also the security video cameras were all off. But there were guys in overalls carrying huge toolboxes and reels of cables walking around the building on that weekend.
Employees were notified that internet cables were being upgraded. But who were the strange workmen, and what were they really doing?
All the power was shut down. If there was a power down, that meant that everything was gone in terms of security, in terms of access to the building. So anybody could have gone there and do any kind of setup.
That was Willie Rodriguez. William.
Say again.
That was William Rodriguez.
Who is someone we're hoping to have on at some point.
Yes, and he's actually agreed to talk with us on the air. He was the, for 20 years, he worked at maintenance at the World Trade Towers, and he's the one who reported the explosions in the basement before the first plane hit.
He's well featured in the DVD Loose Change.
Yeah, yeah, and he's gone all over the world talking about his experience on the morning of 9/11, explaining about...
I think he's still doing that, isn't he?
He's still doing it, yeah. And so we're going to have him on here someday. I tried to work it out a couple times, and the schedule didn't work out. But we're going to have him on.
Makes you wonder what the Bush family has against the American people.
They don't really have anything particularly against the American people. They're just a bunch
of ants to them.
Just
a class thing.
Yeah,
with
the American people are just bugs to the Bushes. They just stomp them. You know, it's not like they really care. They want to kill them. It just doesn't matter to them if they do get killed. They're insignificant.
So where are we as far as this particular expose?
Well, let's go back and listen.
Oh, this is the power outage.
Having worked overtime to get his company's servers back up, Scott took the day off on September 11th. As he watched the towers collapse from New Jersey that morning, he was sure this had been the purpose of the mysterious weekend work. Scott notified many authorities, including the 9/11 Commission, about the unusual and lengthy power outage, but was ignored. Ben Fountain of Fireman's Fund spoke of unusual evacuations ordered at the Twin Towers during the weeks before September 11th.
This is another one.
Others reported that the security alert was inexplicably lifted 5 days prior, and bomb-sniffing dogs were removed.
I remember them being removed.
What would the dogs have discovered had they remained on duty?
They would have discovered explosives.
Exactly, all over the place.
Planted all over the building.
Not long after the disaster, Lower Manhattan saw banners like this one. Although they were idolized as cathedral-like symbols of power and triumph that pierced the New York skyline, the Twin Towers were big money losers for the Port Authority of New York. They cost millions a year to equip with the basics: electricity, water, heat, air conditioning, sewage, and even oxygen, being airtight. As modern communications connected traders from all corners of the globe, tenancy in the Twin Towers continued to drop. The towers presented another problem. Decades ago, their steel beams had been sprayed with fireproof asbestos, a cancer-causing material banned from use in building in the mid-1980s. Although the World Trade Center complex was given several waivers, it was expected to clean up its act. But to remove the asbestos from every supporting beam in the Twin Towers would have been almost undoable. Quotes for this cleanup ran over $1 billion, and no insurance company was willing to bear the cost. An urban renewal project of unfathomable proportions. Given the towers' issues and problems, September 11th proved an unexpected bonanza. The Trade Center was built in the 1960s to revive a rundown area of New York, and 40 years later, urban renewal could again take place.
Folks, just want to let you know, Paul Nagy of the program coming up right after ours. with whom we will be sharing our show next week, just reminded us of a very interesting point. This is not an April Fool's Day prank.
No, it's not.
This is the real thing, even though I would say the joke is on us.
Yeah, the joke's definitely been on us, on the entire American people in the world.
But this is not an Orson Welles version of 9/11.
No.
Just want to let you know that. This is real stuff you're hearing off computer.
This is absolutely real and true and accurate.
So thank you, Mr. Is it Nagy? Paul Nagy? Paul Nagy. Sorry, finally got that right. Paul Nagy.
All right. And Paul Nagy is going to be...
And he'll be coming on next with
doing
Touchstones.
His show, yeah, in just a little bit, in about 10 minutes. So let's continue a little bit more of this, and then we'll sort of wrap it up, right?
Absolutely.
Two white elephants were removed, and a brand new complex is in the works. The full height of the new Freedom Tower will soar to 1,776 feet. The suffocating dust
like the
engulfed Manhattan was much
it.
More than
yeah,
dust.
1,700 feet taller
concrete,
than
glass, metals
what was it?
Containing
1,300
lead,
before?
Mercury,
think,
dioxins,
yeah. Yeah.
Benzene. And
so
of
that
course,
had to go
asbestos.
One better, I guess.
None of that was healthy for any living thing. Today, thousands of rescue workers have developed lung cancer and serious permanent health conditions.
And they died.
And they're not being taken care of by the government.
To die.
No.
Rescue dogs continue to die.
Yeah, lots of rescue dogs.
What you have is
died.
A ground-level municipal incinerator.
Not to mention New Yorkers living
months,
close by.
Yeah.
Burning up the most heavily computerized building in the world.
Blowing it up.
Patients have had black paste coming out of their pores. They have reported bowel movements that are blue or green and have smelled like smoke, despite the fact that they have not been at a fire scene for months.
Only 3 days after September 11th, Washington instructed the EPA to declare Manhattan safe and reopen Wall Street, though the air remained toxic.
A federal judge is blasting the former head of the Environmental Protection Agency for telling New Yorkers it was safe to return to their homes and offices near Ground Zero soon after the 9/11 attacks. The judge called Christine Todd Whitman's actions, quote, conscience shocking, and refused to grant her immunity.
It was documented that the White House ordered EPA to tell these lies, to downplay the seriousness of the environmental hazards.
In addition, uncanny. 9/11 first responders who have fallen ill and applied for aid have been denied.
You hear about that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, they just stopped a big program that was helping them.
Asbestos plays a part in the myth of why the Twin Towers fell on September 11th.
The steel had been sprayed with a lightweight fireproof foam, which, while cheaper, was much less adhesive. The New York Times has reported that the foam fell off easily, and the Port Authority had been fixing and replacing missing sections in the months before September 11th.
Hello.
But even if the fireproofing had been perfectly applied, the impact of the plane crashing into the North Tower was so powerful, it simply blew most of it off, allowing the fire to attack the steel beneath.
Once the plane hit, whatever condition it was in before the fact, made no difference because an impact would knock it off and the fire would have devastating effects on the steel.
Baloney.
One good smack from a jet plane and the puffs of asbestos are all blown off the steel. Would a few hundred doors slamming do the same thing?
That was a lie.
Here, the History Channel tells us how, due to poor fireproofing, flames swept through the pockets between floors.
As much of the fireproofing had been dislodged on impact, the flames were attacking unprotected steel.
Bill Plant is part of the criminal cabal.
When steel is not protected, the strength reduces very fast. When you get to about 1,100 degrees Fahrenheit, you lose about half the strength of the steel.
Yeah, but they couldn't have gotten to 1,100 degrees Fahrenheit because kerosene in an open fire, jet fuel is essentially kerosene, cannot burn at 1,100 degrees. It can't probably get over 800 degrees. Even if the fire were to reach 1,100 degrees, it still would not deform the metal.
It would have to be in the immediate proximity.
Well, even if it were in the immediate proximity, it wouldn't, because the building was all the steel was interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a giant heat sink. So the second you apply heat to any one point on the steel, it wicks through the entire building and equalizes the temperature throughout a very large area. So it cools immediately. You would never be able to get the steel even hot enough to deform. So the whole idea that the fire could cause the building to collapse is utter BS. Cannot happen. The building is a giant heat sink, and the heat would have been transferred isotropically to the next coldest spot in the steel, which was massive. The amount of steel in that building was just massive. So all that explanation is complete and utter balderdash.
My first thinking when I first saw the whole thing, when I saw the buildings come down, I had wondered how those terrorists may have gotten in there. And because to me, it always seemed like there was an internal implosion for the building to come down that way. And I was always fascinated by how the terrorists could have pulled off that much by actually internalizing the detonation as well as responding to the explosion on top. I never chalked it up to the American government.
The answer to that question is they couldn't.
They couldn't, right.
They couldn't have access to the building.
But somebody
but
could.
But we know that others did have access, and that's part of why the part about the power shutdowns and the security shutdowns are so important.
Because it made no common sense if you've been educated in those areas at all for that whole building to come down on its own.
Exactly. So, it just reveals that all these people who are talking about this stuff are part of the criminal cabal. They're in on it, or they wouldn't be giving you this bogus information.
It's the money people.
That's right. On we go.
The fire inside the towers may have reached temperatures of 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit. The New York Times has reported what happened.
We're going to take about two more minutes, and then we're going to sign off.
To those steel floor trusses then.
The steel did heat up, and it became softer and softer, almost like licorice. And eventually,
baloney.
Like licorice.
Can't happen. The heat would wick to the next coldest spot, and it was a massive steel, so it couldn't have gotten like licorice. That's just baloney.
Not even they can
believe
what
they're saying.
And, of
course, they're showing you on this corporate cabal-produced video, they're showing you fake scenes of red-hot steel frame members. It's just complete and utter balderdash.
Initially, all the steel had been weakened in this zone.
Now we'll hear the
40
rebuttal.
40 years ago, the steel used to build the World Trade Center was certified by Underwriters Laboratories, a global product compliance and public safety guardian. Let's hear a lone voice that spoke out from this enormous company.
Yeah, this gives you the...
My name is Kevin Ryan, and I'm formerly a manager at Underwriters Laboratories. I was fired from my job 5 days after sending a letter to a government scientist at the NIST questioning the report that the NIST had recently released in October of 2004. I wrote this letter because I had serious questions about what I saw in the report. Those questions went back to September of 2001 when UL's CEO came to our location in South Bend. He told our entire staff that the World Trade Center steel had been certified by UL, and he said that we should be proud of how long the buildings had stood.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have today.
We
got really into this, didn't we?
And again, we want you folks to know that this was not an April Fool's Day prank. This is as real as it gets. We're not trying to be Orson Welles and do War of the Worlds with 9/11 here, but I think there's much we need to think about before we allow those that we choose to govern us to go any further. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else here in the studio with John Paul McClellan. Touchstones is coming up next. Bidding you cheers until next time.